Hi, this is Charles, democraticfundamentalism.org. First, I want to welcome those of you linking into democraticfundamentalism.org from other sites. I do my best to provide links to relevant news stories on other sites, a lot on CNN, to provide you with independent verification of what I talk about. As I always say, you don't have to take my word for anything, because I don't have to make this stuff up. I don't know if that's good or bad. Having what I would call a long-term synchronicity day today. Things I learned or had experienced long ago suddenly seem extremely relevant today. But you have days like that. Today it comes from me in regard to the use of spy satellite technology, at this time at least, for the purpose of catching the DC sniper. That story has numerous implications related to Posse Comitatus legislation that prohibits the use of the military toward the United States civilian population and territories, and why it's so dangerous for you and me. Always reminds me of the movie Demolition Man, actually. Be taking a few minutes to talk a little more about Jimmy Carter, the Nobel Peace Prize winner for the year, who I believe is the original cultural creative of our times, one of those quiet leaders who did a lot of good with little notoriety. I really do want to talk to him for a few hours one day. I can't tell you whether media outlets are trying to inform us, reassure us, or drum it into us just how futile it can be to attempt to stop a determined terrorist, and therefore we should all get more frightened than necessary, get angry, and be willing to go to war. I don't know if that's what's up. Don't get me wrong, it seems like they even challenged the sniper to outsmart them. I feel very badly for the people who've been killed and their families. So it is what it means to have our people held hostage to the whims of a madman or a small group of killers. I used to live in that area before I moved to Washington State. I have friends who live there. And of course, here I am sitting watching Arthel Neville on CNN's Talkback Live. It's one of my favorite programs on TV because she gives people an opportunity to speak, you know, average citizens like you and me, on practically every topic imaginable. Arthel Neville brings common sense and the feelings and needs of the people to the forefront of the issues. And I really like that. She's on 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Just had to tell you about that. Brought it up because it never ceases to amaze me, actually, how I'm reminded, mostly by commercials, that Larry King, he's on CNN 9 p.m. Eastern and replays throughout the night. Anyway, Larry always seems to be showing programs with people talking about the exact things I'm talking and thinking about. I doubt it's on purpose, just one of those synchronicity things. This time it was a program featuring Harry Belafonte talking about his recent remarks about Colin Powell and saying how he was a house slave. But even more, Harry talks about the abominable human rights policies of the Bush administration, the pitfalls and lack of respect of international law and civilization displayed in Bush's aggressive military policies, and much, much more. We'll spend some time on that, too, and a little entertainment news with a twist as well. Let's take a look at the news. The story from CNN, sniper fired from about 30 yards away. This story comes from yesterday from Falls Church, Virginia. Witness to the latest Washington-area sniper attacks told authorities he saw a man brandishing a weapon on his shoulder in the Monday night shooting, and is believed the shot was fired from 30 yards away, sources said Wednesday. The sniper's previous victims were all shot from a distance of several hundred yards, authorities have said. An official said Wednesday that investigators are looking at surveillance tapes from the Home Depot, outside security cameras at two nearby buildings, and tapes from police cruiser cameras. They're also reviewing Virginia Department of Transportation camera material. A series of shootings began October 2nd when the sniper missed his intended target. Since then, the sniper has killed nine people and wounded two others, including a 13-year-old boy. Each victim was shot with a single 223 caliber bullet. Next story, follow-up to that, the military to assist in a sniper hunt. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has signed a deployment order that allows Army airborne surveillance and reconnaissance aircraft to be used in the hunt for the Washington-area sniper. The order signed Tuesday night authorizes the use of RC-7 and U-21 aircraft. Law enforcement authorities will request the equipment as needed. Military sources said that troops would operate the equipment and point out potential targets to law enforcement, which would handle all other aspects of the operation. This procedure would avoid any potential conflict with the Posse Comitatus Act, an 1878 law that prohibits the military from direct involvement in civilian law enforcement. Troops have worked with civilian authorities before in drug interdiction, helping search for suspects but not participating in arrests. An FBI agent would be on each aircraft to determine what targets to pursue. Local police jurisdiction said the FBI requested the help. The Pentagon, concerned that the sniper could have an understanding of how the military operates, is reluctant to provide details. It's not saying how the equipment will be used, how much it will fly over the Washington area, or when it will fly. You know, on first review, it would seem admirable to use all the resources available to us to end things, like the sniper attacks in D.C. There's nothing I'd like better to put an end to the attacks right now. But every time the law is stretched a little, the distortions of values and principles are stretched just a little more. What I fear most about the coverage of the shootings is that they will make Americans numb to the occurrence of such terrorist attacks, foreign or domestic, and will accept them as a part of life instead of recognizing them as a symptom of something that needs to be addressed. And the real issue is not terrorism, it's just. And every time we accept a new definition of what is just, we lose just a little more of our righteousness as a culture. Let me help you understand what they're actually proposing here. And I'll qualify my remarks by noting that when I lived in Atlanta, I worked with a company that invented the technology and software that makes it possible for satellites to take pictures in space and then transmit them to security personnel who are then able to do things like tell you the color of your hair, your license plate numbers, what plants you have growing in and outside your house using infrared technology. They can actually tell what physical activities you are doing in your house. Think about that for a minute. So far, the use of that technology has been mostly banned because of issues of invasion of privacy. Most people who haven't been a student of how sociological trends are created and why would not understand what would be lost or created over a 10-year or 20-year period in order to cause people to accept methods of operation or the acceptance of policies or the focus of the public's attention. It's a very real psychological war going on. It utilizes impressions delivered by the media, created and crafted by people who use human response research to cause you to do what they want. I'm not saying this is a broad conspiracy of any kind. Advertisers and governments and organizations and people just like you and me create phrases and do things to cause other people to agree or do things we just plain old like them to do. Slowly but surely, it becomes so ingrained in them, people just do it. It's an integrated behavior. So my concern about the use of the military has to do with whether stretching the rules now will lead to the acceptance of the suspension of the rule, the Posse Comitatus, that forbids the military from participating in law enforcement out of the fear that's generated and the desperation of the public as they attempt to make sense out of something that scares them. As this administration has shown, it's pretty much willing to do whatever it must to dissuade dissidents from speaking up and taking action. So I'm just concerned that, once again, what will seem like a good idea now will be a fateful acquiescence later. It's just something to think about. I'd mentioned Harry Belafonte. He made a remark last week comparing Colin Powell to a house slave. And found this really great interview with Larry King. It's really an incredible interview. It's difficult to know which part of it is more inspiring or important. It's that good. Belafonte is one of those guys who has done an incredible amount of good in the world without a great deal of recognition. Belafonte is best known in public for the song The Banana Boat Song, many of us have sung in the shower over the years. I'll include it in the mix tonight to help remind you. Maybe they'll show this program over and over, though, so you'll have a chance to see it. Suppose first we'll call on the transcript from the Larry King Live program to address the issue of Harry Belafonte making references to Colin Powell as a house slave. Here's what Belafonte had to say about it. First, King actually said he was a close friend of Martin Luther King, worked as a humanitarian, won numerous prizes, including the Nelson Mandela Courage Award. He brought together performers like Michael Jackson and Bruce Springsteen, was responsible for We Are the World. His work with troubled youth, President Kennedy named him a cultural advisor to the Peace Corps. The list could go on and on. That, of course, King introducing Belafonte. This is Belafonte's remark, the one that caused the controversy. He said, "There's an old saying in the days of slavery, there are slaves who lived on the plantation and there were those slaves who lived in the house. You got the privilege of living in the house if you served the master. Colin Powell was permitted to come into the house of the master." King said, "All right, Harry, what did you mean?" Belafonte said, "First of all, let me hasten to say, Larry, that this was never meant to be a personal attack on Colin Powell's character. What it was meant, however, to be was an attack on policy. And the reference and the metaphor used about slavery, it's my personal feeling that plantations exist all over America. If you walk into South Central Los Angeles, into Watts, or you walk into Over the Rhine in Cincinnati, you'll find people who live lives that are as degrading as anything that slavery had ever produced. They live in economic oppression, they live in a disenfranchised way. In the hearts and minds of those people and millions of others, you're always looking for hope. And whenever somebody within our tribe, within our group, emerges that has the position of authority and power to make a difference in the way business is done, our expectations run high. Many times those expectations are not fulfilled. But when such an individual is in the service of those who not only perpetuate the oppression, but sometimes design the way in which it is applied, it then becomes very, very, very critical that we raise our voices and be heard." King said, "I'm sorry, I don't mean, isn't it possible, Harry, one that Colin Powell, who has stood up for his country, fought for his country, may have disagreed in council, but supports his president in a tough time of need? Why compare that to being as a slave?" Belafonte said, "Because I think to a great degree, that which governs us is really the extent to which we are permitted by the forces of power in this country to do what it is we can do to make a difference. The civil rights movement was a huge struggle against an enormous opposition. You know, many people who lived under that tenet and what we had to do to try to position people in high places to make a difference so we could change the way in which our democracy functioned was part of the game. And Colin Powell is in that position. And I do believe that the policies that have been expressed by the administration he serves are less than honorable. It is not just about what I say. Last year in South Africa, the United Nations and Kofi Annan gave us an excellent opportunity in convening the International Conference on Racism, directed by a woman of remarkable credentials, the former President of Ireland, Mary Robinson. There was a place where the United States should have been in attendance and given us the benefit of thought on a very grievous set of conditions that affect the human family, the issue of race. And in that instance, the United States government sought to turn its back on the thousands of people who were gathered there to make a difference. And Colin Powell was the point person on that distancing of our country, you know." King asks, "What do you want him to do? What do you want him to do?" "Belafonte, I would like him to live up to a higher moral standard. You know, Jeffords doesn't have to be the only one who sits in disagreement with the policies of this country and this government and acts upon it out of conscience. Where is Colin Powell's conscience? In a time when the world is getting ready to go up into flames in a war that's hugely ill-advised, you know. Today we're going to go after Iraq, you know. Where do we go next? Iran? And then when our present friends fall out of favor with us, do we go after Pakistan?" King asked, but Can't Colin Powell have a belief that the Iraqi situation is the administration's point of view, is correct, and agree with its principles without giving up his own? You're assuming that he's going against his principles. Maybe they are his principles. Belafonte said, well, if they are his principles, then I sit opposed to them. I have to make the assumption that it's not his principles because of what he said at the Republican National Convention when he gave that remarkable speech. Or when he said going through the United Nations as the vehicle through which this problem should be settled. To do anything less than that and to stick to that mandate, I think, is a sellout. King says, so you think he's selling out? Has he disappointed you then? Belafonte says, yes, you know, unfortunately he has. As I said before earlier, we have high expectations, necessarily for those who come from color, who come from a history of oppression, or at least an understanding of it. And what we would hope is that people who come from that experience would use it effectively to change the way in which others do business in the world of oppression. King asks, do you have the same views about Condoleezza Rice? He says, yes, absolutely. Even more so, because I've never heard from Condoleezza Rice even the suggestion towards some of the more lenient thoughts or some of the more appropriate thoughts that Colin Powell has expressed. King says, let's say they share your beliefs and are trying to do the best from within. Do you want them to make a moral statement and quit the administration? Do you want them to speak out and say, I was opposed to that? What do you want Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice? Let's concentrate on Colin. What do you want him to do? Belafonte says, Colin Powell is not a victim here. Let's get that straight. Colin Powell is an individual. He's a man of enormous resources. He has an enormous intelligence. He has that agenda. What is that agenda, Colin? I mean, you know, you speak out about the disenfranchised. You speak out about the fairness of race. You speak about democracy. Everything that is in your administration's policy runs contrary to that fact. And King says, and Condoleezza, do you feel the same way? So if you were them, you would quit? And Belafonte says, if I was them, I would use the platform to speak out against the ill-advised policies of the administration. I would go as far as inviting to be fired if that's what happens. You know, Colin Powell's on the brink of being nominated for presidency of this country. Obviously, he's held in high esteem. He doesn't have to grovel to anyone. You know, nor do I suggest that that's necessarily what he's doing. Maybe his agenda is that of the president. He often says that he serves them with great pride and with great passion. That's unfortunate. King says, in retrospect, were your remarks a bit harsh by going into a comparison to slavery, to making them appear like, well, put it frankly, Uncle Tom? Belafonte says, well, I think those who have the capacity and the courage to make a difference by doing bold things, who refuse to apply that condition, are more often suspect of selling out than they are of standing brave and courageous as others have done. You know, I didn't refer to him as Uncle Tom. I said those who sit in the service of the house and those who sit in the service of those who languish on the plantation. America has many plantations, even today. Not only in America. Those plantations sit in many places around the world where I've seen people suffer. I work for the United Nations. I go to places where enormous upheaval and pain and anguish exist. And a lot of it exists based upon American policy. Whom we support as heads of state, what countries we've helped to overthrow, what leaders we've helped to diminish because they did not fit the mold we think they should fit, no matter how ill-advised that thought may be. It is not without reason that I make my observation. Anyway, you should really read the entire interview. Believe in its entirety. It's an important statement to the world. Everything he says is a gem. Belafonte comments on a question by a caller regarding war in the Bush administration. The caller says, hello, Mr. Belafonte. I heard you just the last segment talking about the fact that you're against the future killings of innocent American boys under this administration's new policy. I'm the mother of a 23-year-old boy that was killed on Tower 1 because he was an American citizen. I really don't see where you think that you are, that this have has happened to our boys already. Our boys have been killed. I feel you're talking first as a black man and as an American secondly, and that's what saddens me, and I think it would sadden all of us. The 3,000 families whose people were mowed down because we were Americans trying to live the American dream. My boy was killed because he went to work, and I just wish you would address that. Belafonte said, I served in the United States Armed Forces and the United States Navy during the Second World War as a munitions loader. I've also served some of the most remarkable Americans of our century. I was embraced with and worked for Eleanor Roosevelt, John Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, Paul Robeson. When you take a look at men like Martin Luther King, with whom I marched and served, and the more recent history, people of the moral stature, of people like Nelson Mandela, I sit and I grieve with each and every American who lost someone on 9/11. And I also sit and grieve with every American mother who lost some son to the Ku Klux Klan. Tyranny is not exclusive in the experience of Americans just to 9/11. A lot of people have known terror and terrorism. It's a sad thing. And I'm not the first black and then American. I've always been and will be first American and then whatever I happen to be, like the mosaic that makes up this country. And I'm sorry if what I've said and the way in which I interpret our policy offends you to the degree you think I'm ignorant of and willing to dismiss the death and the pain that our nation feels. As a matter of fact, quite the contrary. It is precisely the pain that I know that this nation feels that I dread seeing us go through more of it, to lose more sons, more daughters, because we are being ill-advised on how to deal with the ills of the nation. Deal with hunger, deal with poverty, deal with disenfranchisement, which is rampant among the 6 billion people who make up this planet. I see most of them. I spent time in Rwanda, where 800,000 people were murdered in a matter of months. Violence is not mutiny. It's not new to the world. We've got to stop it, and I make a plea for it. And I hope we can find policies and thinkers and people who will come to their senses and lead us out of this abyss. I thought it was interesting after watching and reading that remark from Harry Belafonte, thinking, don't worry, Harry, there's a bunch of us out here trying. I got an email today asking me why I thought I had all the answers, whether or not I could back up my arrogance. And I think it's a very good question. Not sure what I'm going to do or how I'll do it. What I believe is that I'm a citizen with some ideas and methods that have the possibility of working. I believe that what I think and represent is more accurate of what real working people think and feel as human beings, and that I express what they would actually choose if they could have the world be a particular way, a world that actually works for everyone. The difference is that I'm actually willing to hear the answers and questions, and I'm actually willing and committed to seeing the solutions being applied. And that's not what's been going on in this country, or very many others in this world. That's what's got to change. Willingness, commitment, intent, and resolve. As for the arrogance, think what you will. Every president, representative, religious leader, every one of them at some point had to make a choice to step forward and offer their ideas, whether people accepted or rejected them. Success for me will not be defined by my own personal success, by the success of forwarding ideas that people, well, that people actually can make sense of and abide by, with or without law. Whoever leads the actual movement to cause global peace and abundance for all is irrelevant to the fact that the job needs to get done. And it will happen. If I can inspire someone else to lead it, or empower it by speaking my mind and causing others to do the same, then to me, that is success. I'd like to say a few things about Jimmy Carter. I always say tools and weapons and things are good when put in the right hands, in the hands of people who have good intent. And they can be horrible things in the hands of people with the wrong intent. Well, I think of Jimmy Carter as one of those guys who had all the best intents. That, by the way, is why certain Republican propagandists went so far out of their way to discredit Carter for winning the Nobel Peace Prize. They don't want you to look up to people in history who serve as excellent examples of those who do good by making peace, when they want you to believe in war tactics to resolve things. That's why I think it's important to shed some light on the greatness of Jimmy Carter. Carter served in the Navy as a nuclear scientist, served on a nuclear sub. He was never one of those people who just did his job and dealt with what was in front of him. In fact, what has always impressed me most, and what few people know about him, is that in 1958, he and an associate created a document that outlined a global plan to fairly distribute the world's resources and inventions to all people as needed. Certainly based on a system that relied on a financial basis of credits and debits, like money, but it fully intended to serve the people of this planet. And that's what the difference is with Jimmy Carter. Intent. Intent is often suppressed in this world by people who could find advantage in disrupting the plans of those who would rely on the cooperation of others to cause such a noble plan to take tangible form. In my book, that's what's occurred with the vision of Jimmy Carter. And I swear one day I'll talk to him about that plan. But despite attempts to suppress the true visionaries of our country, people like John and Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, even in Bush's refusal to speak with Nelson Mandela about world events, Jimmy Carter has accomplished a great deal. But here's a little of the attitude Carter had to deal with. And this is a story originally told by Tip O'Neill, being the leader of the House when Carter took office as president. And what I want you to notice about it most is how easy it is to take a vision full of goodness and possibility for the world and kill it as quickly as it is spoken, regardless of how good the ideas are. It's an example of just how our leaders, and we as people, have given up hope that good will conquer evil, put simply. When people speak of the possibility of accomplishing great things, other people just shrug their shoulders and say, it's impossible. Why bother trying?